This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Welcome to the latest edition to the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This is episode 209, coming off a bye week. Cardinals didn't lose. So there's that. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from AvengeTheBirds.com, the SB Nation site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And, you know, obviously we don't have a game to go through, but this will be our mid-season show. We're going to give grades. We're going to give awards. And then we're going to look ahead. We're going to look at the Chiefs game because they've got one heck of a game coming up. One very, very big obstacle against the Kansas City Chiefs. And then we'll look at some of the roster moves in particular, since it seems like they have all the offensive linemen on the roster right now. Well, Seth, first of all, what did you do to spend the bye? I mean, since we didn't have to cover a Cardinals game.
Not much on Sunday. It was nice to just wake up and watch a little football, and we grilled steaks and just relaxed, and I didn't have to watch any bad football if I didn't want to.
And there was we got to watch, what was it?
Yeah.
The Rams game and the Patriots game. It was all sorts. I mean, it was just, I watched more football than I actually normally do because – you know, I didn't have pregame and postgame stuff to write about, so still wrote, but, you know, it was definitely different. But we get back into the grind of things. We're at the midseason point. The Cardinals have a game on Sunday, and let's talk some midseason grades by position. At 2-6, I can imagine what we probably will say is most of them are not that good. But let's go ahead and start, Seth. Start with the quarterback position. What grade would you give the position so far this year?
I hate to do this. I guess I would say a D. I think it's probably an F, but the fact that there's been like signs of life with Josh Rosen, because his grade, I mean, if we're being completely honest, is about a C. And then the work of one former Arizona Cardinal, Sam Bradford, is nothing short of an F. I mean, so I guess you just even that out and say a D, but it's probably more leaning to an F, but also I'll just say D because you want to give the rookie the benefit of the doubt on some of the things that he's struggled with, and we can, you know, kind of put out of our mind the Sam Bradford era.
I would have to agree. I think the quarterback position deserves a trending upward D. I don't know if Rosen's done enough to make it a high D, but it's basically right now trending in the right direction. Bradford was abysmal, which is one of the biggest mysteries of the year, because Sam Bradford's never been abysmal. He's always been fine, like productive. And he was just terrible in every sense of the way, every sense of the game and every piece of everything. And then Rosen, I mean, he had that first game. He looked so good. Then he's looked more rookie-like. And then he brings the comeback. And so you have a grade that's trending in the right direction, at least. So it's not a stagnant D. It's an upward rising D.
Right. It's one of those things where, you know, you're a teacher, so you know this. Like your quarter grade was an F, and now you're kind of at the halfway point of the second quarter, and you're like, hey, you're at a D, but you're moving towards a good spot where you could probably end the semester with a C in this class. Let's continue to pick it up. And, you know, who knows? Maybe Rosen kind of gives us some Pat Mahomes like games, and we get all the way up to a B level.
That would be amazing, because that would take some fantastic play to get there. And as we'll talk about in the weeks to come, while the Cardinals have a brutal schedule the rest of the way, they do play a lot of suspect defenses. And with an offense that should be improving and a rookie quarterback that should be improving, you could see some really good numbers from the quarterback position, considering the teams that they're going against. Kansas City, not a good defense. Atlanta, not a great defense. Green Bay, not a good defense. Detroit, not that great a defense. You know, San Diego's been solid across the board, but they're giving up, what, 23, 24 points a game as well.
And there's still about Joey Bosa, which with the Cardinals' offensive line really, really helps.
That's true. That's true. But, yeah, so the quarterback position, it's a trending upward D. At running back, though. So running back's an interesting position because we were so excited about David Johnson, but we've gotten so little from David Johnson, whether it's his fault or not. And I will say this about David Johnson. He doesn't – I mean, he's not getting much in space, but he still doesn't look like he's playing right. I'm not saying he's not healthy. He's just playing differently than he's played before. He's not hitting the burst. He's not hitting the holes as hard. It almost looks to me some of those things that his rookie year, some of that hesitation has re-entered, probably because he's thinking more than he should be. And so for the running back position, I mean, I know it's not some of his heart. I mean, it's at best, I think, a C minus at best, and it's probably closer to a D.
I was gonna say I'm going with a D, because as little as much as it's not all David Johnson's fault, he doesn't look like David Johnson, and that is partially David Johnson's fault. Like you said, he looks tentative. He looks slow. He looks, you know, it's just, it, like you said, it doesn't look like David Johnson. So it's really hard to give this a higher letter grade when, as you said, and, you know, we can be completely honest about this. They have not gotten a lot of production out of the running back spot. And that makes judging the spot, you either have to be brutally honest or you say, hey, this isn't his fault. He's still playing at a very good level. And I think it's giving him too much of a pass to say he's playing at a really good level. So here's the other thing. We're grading all the running backs. So even if you wanted to give David Johnson a C minus or a C, they've gotten literally nothing from anybody else.
That is true.
So the rest are getting Fs. So again, your average weight grade is going to be right around a D.
That's true. Let's add receivers. So you've got Larry Fitzgerald, who's finally putting up some numbers. Christian Kirk, who's been fairly consistent. Chad Williams, who has it's hard to say he's played poorly, but he just hasn't been playing productively. You got JJ Nelson dropping passes, and whew, I mean, it's really hard to do this, but can you really give the receivers more than a D? Maybe even with Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk? I mean, can you really give it more than that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you can talk me into a C if you want to say that, one, obviously Fitz is hurt, and two, or Fitz was hurt and, you know, kind of struggled early on, and two, that you've gotten good production from a rookie in Christian Kirk. But I think the lack of growth from Chad Williams, not that there's no growth, but it just hasn't been as much as we had hoped. The reduction of growth from JJ Nelson and then nobody else stepping up in any way, shape, or form, it makes it really hard to you know, say anything positive. So I could, like I said, I could be persuaded to give this this group a C if you want to say, hey, Christian Kirk's been a B. Fitz has been a C based on what he is, we're used to seeing from him, but to be fair, he's been injured quite a bit. But I mean, yeah, it's been, I mean, when you're talking about, you've really only gotten anything out of two players, and one of them has admittedly struggled with injuries in Fitz before last game, it's tough to say anything in a positive manner in that. And so, you know, a C is being very generous. A D is probably more realistic.
Tight ends. A tight end is, I mean.
Yeah, it's got to be an F. I mean, it's hard on Ricky Seals-Jones because I think – and it's something that you and I both were very adamant about, that we felt like the hype was too much for Ricky Seals-Jones. Like, they were putting two, like, fans and pundits and fantasy guys and just all
that. And even, like, people in the organization that, like, they were banking on Ricky Seals-Jones for the tight end position. It was really weird. Steve Keim talked about how high he was on him. It was a lot of, like, it was for a guy that's playing tight end for the second year in his career.
And he still couldn't block.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, was, he's still, like, that was my thing with this is, you're basically, I mean, he's basically like a poor man's early Jimmy Graham. Like, he's not even super athlete Jimmy Graham. He's basically, you know, like old Jimmy Graham, but not as good of a blocker yet. You get what I'm saying? So, and so you, people were putting this, oh, he's a, you know, always going to be a game changer, this, that, and the other. And it's like, can the guy just get on the field and like see where he's at in his growth? Because he's never done it before.
Like, right. And then the, one of the things we have to look at with his numbers, they give his four touchdowns that he's got in the 2 years. If you look, they were bust, he was wide open. So, and I don't, you know, not knowing the play design, how much it was that he did that, but it seems to be when his big plays come, almost every single time, it's because the defense left him wide open. So there was a mismatch, and it was a mismatch because there was a mistake.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, then obviously Jermaine Gresham still doing kind of frustrating Jermaine Gresham things. His play isn't even the issue. It's still that
he makes the worst mistakes at the worst times.
Right. The most like inopportune times he makes a boneheaded play. Obviously Gabe Holmes stunk. I mean,
I'm actually really intrigued with the fact that they signed John Phillips. I mean, I'd never heard of John Phillips, so he could be just a guy that they signed, but he's a 9-year veteran who can block. That gives them an actual blocking tight end.
Yeah, right. So it's one of those things. It's like when you watch him, when you watch the tight ends, and you just said it like, oh, this new guy they signed might help. And then you're like, he might end up being the best tight end on the roster. It just kind of tells you how bad the position is right now.
Oh, and we have to talk about, oh my gosh, the offensive line. And it is,
it's unfortunate that, and it's an unfortunate reality, but they're the worst offensive line in the NFL. A lot of it has to do with injury. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from the guys that are out there trying their best that are struggling with injury. But at the same time, you have to say, like, you have to call a spade and
right. DJ Humphries, inconsistent. Mike Iupati, great in the preseason and training camp. Looks like old Mike Iupati.
Yeah, it looks like he's done. I mean, Iupati looks done.
Mason Cole looks like a rookie.
Yeah, he's quietly struggled quite a bit from just, I mean, like, I think you said it on the last podcast, like, how different is this offensive line if AQ Shipley's healthy? And I don't think we expected to say that, but it's the reality of it. When you look at Justin Pugh, I hate to say this, but I don't think you can say anything, but he's been a bust thus far of a signing. I mean, obviously it's 8 games into year one and he's missed what, 2 of them. But I mean, that's a bad $9 million signing right now, not for the future, just right now. And then Andre Smith, you know, he's a very bad pass blocking right tackle.
Well, and he was atrocious to start the season. Got hurt a couple times. Now, according to Pro Football Focus numbers, he's actually been pretty solid his last couple of games.
Right, and I think he kind of falls into the fits thing, and where they probably shouldn't, like, and you said it, like, he missed a couple games, but, like, he probably shouldn't have been playing until 2 weeks ago, maybe. So, I mean, but if you're out there, you still are going to get graded on it. Like, fair right. or not. Like, you're going right. to get – people are going to have to say, hey, you know, like, what did you do while you were out there that was your choice to play through the pain?
Right. And so, I mean, you that best, you could argue D-, but I don't think you could even make that a case, because the offensive line is kind of the core of all the issues that there have been. The Sam Bradford aside, there were issues with protection. So he wasn't comfortable. So he wasn't making reads. Sometimes he had protection, but he didn't trust his protection. So everything goes down to the fact that the offensive line, which was supposed to be a good run blocking offensive line, the running game is non-existent and the offense is non-existent too. So therefore, if everyone's playing badly, you can't have a good offensive line, because a good offensive line at least makes your other positions look fine.
Yeah. And that's really the unfortunate and frustrating thing thus far, is that you expected this team to be better. And like you said, there was expectations of this offensive line. There was expectations of David Johnson. There was expectations of a now cut Sam Bradford, of, you know, unfortunately hamstring hampered Larry Fitzgerald, of a Chad Williams to step up, of a Ricky, like, literally every single player to a man you can look at and say you expected more than what you've gotten. And yeah. And that, outside of maybe Christian Kirk.
And he's really been a pleasant surprise, especially since we didn't think he would be much of a contributor this year, and he's been.
So here's the weirdest thing with Kirk to me, and I don't want to take away anything that he's done, because he's, like you said, he's been a very pleasant surprise. But it's ironic to me that the worst thing about Kirk has been his work in punt returns.
Right.
The one thing that everybody expected him to do so well is actually, and I don't even want to say he struggled, he just hasn't really done it. And so you're like, you're looking at it and you're going, oh man, like, we still don't have that figured out. So,
ooh, defensive line. This one isn't terrible. I would give this group overall a C. You've gotten good Chandler Jones play. You've had some moments from Benson Mayoa. Marcus Golden's coming on. Corey Peters has been consistent. It's that other tackle position that's been up and down.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if they could get more consistency from Robert Kamdiche, you would talk about this as maybe the best group on the team, positional wise,
right?
But their average, because, like you said, you've got a lot from Chandler Jones. I would say you'd give him a a B plus, A minus for his season. If you just combine Mayo and Golden, I think you would give them a C plus to a B. Peters is a solid B player. That's who he is. That's who he's always been. Unfortunately, he's missed two games, two or three. Anyways, he's missed a couple games, and in his absence, you've gotten C and D level contributions, and then you combine that with Kim Dice has kind of been the poster boy of average, because his highs are extremely high and his lows are getting moved back to the second team lows. Like, so that's the hard part.
Linebackers, I think Josh Bynes' solid play keeps this from being a failing grade. Hassan Reck is playing better. Dayon Buchanan showed some promise, but it's recently been moved up from F to D in my opinion, because they got pretty good linebacker play against San Francisco.
Yeah, and I would agree with that.
Now, the secondary. Now, look at the cornerbacks. I think it's cornerbacks. You could probably give it a solid B. Patrick Peterson's been great, and Jamar Taylor struggled, but then Benae Benwicker has been pretty solid. I think you've gotten solid work from the cornerbacks.
Yeah, and I think that was the strong thing, is once they made the move from Jamar to Benwicker, they've really, you know, improved, and that's kind of been the one consistent this year. Wouldn't you say is that? After they made that move, they've been consistently good. I wouldn't say great, but they've been consistently good against the pass. I think if they had a more consistent pass rush, they would be closer to great, which would be an A. So I would agree they're a B. I think Peterson's played an A level. Attitude's been obviously a C or a D, but. You know, everything else has been, I think, very consistent for them.
And I'd give even the safeties a solid B overall. You've gotten really good production from both Antoine Bethea and Buda Baker. Trey Boston, I mean, they have not been great, but it's not much you can complain about. I mean, look at some of this production number-wise. This is what the Cardinals have based on coach review. Antoine Bethea has 76 tackles in 8 games. Buda Baker has 70 tackles. So you've got two players who are on pace for 140 and more tackles. Josh Bynes at linebackers has 61. So you've got three players on track for more than 120 tackles this year. That's kind of crazy. And as you know, Boston's not been great, but he's got some interceptions. He's doing what he's been doing. And, you know, it's kind of showing what the issues have been for Cardinals defensively have been up front. It's been up front basically the entire year. It's getting the defensive line consistent and the linebackers doing what they're supposed to do, because the secondary has been pretty solid.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the safeties, like Boston's play has been, I would say, the most surprising of how consistent it's been. You know, Bethea, I think, you know, he's the old pro. It's been – Buda has played well. I think – like, I'm going to get destroyed for this. I think we tend to oversell his numbers, right? Because he does make a ton of them. Ton of plays, and he has really good numbers. But I think when you have a guy like him that's able to kind of change momentum, and he's started to make more plays on the ball, that's gonna kind of take him to the next level outside of being a guy that collects a lot of tackles.
Right. Now, special teams, this is kind of interesting. I guess what? I can't give the return game anything more than an F. Kickoff returns have been a dreadful. Mostly it's been, you know, touchbacks. But even when they do get a chance, there's no threat of anything happening. The punt return game has been abysmal as well. They haven't been able to break anything with Christian Kirk. So, yeah, good fat failing grade for both of those.
Yeah, and so when you look at it, it's unfortunate because I don't know if I understand what the point of Brandon Williams on kick returns was, outside of the fact that you just couldn't find a way to have TJ Logan on active because of numbers.
That's and more or less. And I think so, that's what it was.
Yeah. So you just, you know, you went with Brandon because you wanted him on special teams. But the whole like thing is that he's been bad on specials. So like he's a terrible kick returner because he's never done it. So it's not.
No. He had two. He had two in college.
Right. Exactly. So he's done it two more times than Jess and I in our entire lives.
Yes.
And in that sense, you know, I don't blame him. It's not his fault. Like
that was like when they had Andre Ellington back there.
Right. It's not there.
It's not as bad as Andre Ellington.
No. Yeah. But, you're right about that.
And you know, Brandon Williams, I mean, you'd think would offer some potential because he's super athletic. He's really fast. And in addition to the elite movement skills, and he played running back, so he does add a bigger, more physical run back there with elite athletic skills. But he just doesn't have the. But he runs really fast in a straight line to tacklers.
Exactly. So
the kicking game, you know,
kickoffs are fine. They haven't given up anything in kick returns.
Field goals. He's got the one ugly miss.
I don't know. I mean,
and that one's hard to do because really the Cardinals haven't
they haven't had a chance to kick many field goals.
That one is, I think, plain is just an incomplete.
He hasn't kicked any or missed any extra points this year, has he?
Nope, he has not. But they haven't scored many touchdowns either. So,
well, I mean, yeah. So hey, I mean,
but Andy Lee, he gets an A.
Exactly. Andy Lee is your solid A performance thus far for the Arizona Cardinals roster.
Oh, okay. Let's wrap that up and coming back on the next hour, next segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We'll do midseason awards. Yeah. Is there any awards to be had? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Midseason awards. Based on the grades, it's going to be kind of tough, but let's look smaller picture, bigger picture, MVP, rookie of the year, newcomer of the year, big surprise, big disappointment. Okay. Who would be your team MVP so far? And guess what? I, as good as Andy Lee's been, I'm just going to ignore his play because if when your best player is a punter, yeah, there's a problem with it.
We don't want to be that sad.
No. So who are your team MVPs so far?
I would say Chandler Jones. I went back and forth on this. I thought about Buddha, but Buddha's kind of struggled in coverage a little bit. I think Jones, he had one inconsistent game, but for the most part, he's on pace for, 13 sacks and, 32 tackles for loss on the season. Another, you know, incredibly productive season for a guy that a lot of people, and not Cardinals fans, but like a lot of people outside the Cardinals fan base and organization questioned paying that guy, trading for that guy and then paying him. And so I think Jones has been the one consistent factor. I probably would have given it to Patrick Peterson if there wasn't the little to do, right after the Broncos game.
And yeah, so Chandler Jones would be my number one team MVP. And then I'm going to go with a second one, and that would be Josh Bynes. Not because he's been solid. He's been good. It's also because he's really the only glue to that linebacker position that's been doing anything. So he's been – That linebacker group has not been good. I mean, they've got seven linebackers on the roster, but he's the only one putting up any sort of production. And so I would give it to Chandler Jones and Josh Bynes, even though Josh Bynes is definitely not their best player. He's been one of their most valuable ones so far. I think
that's a great way to look at it. Like, when you talk about most valuable, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, all like good teams, it typically their quarterback's the most valuable player. But like, who's the guy if you took away from a team that, and let's just be honest, sucked the first half of the year, like, who's the guy if you took him away would hurt? And I think Bynes is
the gosh, take Bynes away, oh my heavens.
Yeah, and so that's why I think you're right. Bynes is a really solid pick in there.
So, rookie of the year, do you go Josh Rosen? Do you go Christian Kirk? Do you go Mason Cole?
No, I go Christian Kirk. I think when it's all said and done, Rosen is going to win this award, like when we give it away on our final show of the season. But as of now, I would give it to Kirk, because I think he's been the best rookie so far.
Right, right. That makes sense. I don't think you can make much argument about that based on now. Here's the thing. The Cardinals have had significant rookie contributions, because you've got and here's a guy. This is going to be kind of an out there, but as good as Christian Kirk's been, this is my dark horse guy. That's going to be Zeke Turner for his play on special teams. Not one of the draft picks, but he plays a significant part on special teams. He might lead the NFL in special teams tackles. Now, the Cardinals have him credited with 11. Officially, he has 9, and I think that leads the NFL. Christian Kirk's been great. Josh Rosen will probably end up being that guy because he's growing and doing quarterback things. But, you know, right now, I still think the most outstanding would be Zeke Turner, even though he doesn't do it on the offense or defense. It's coming on special teams.
Yeah, and that's big, and that's one of those things where it's not an expected thing. And it was funny. Like, one of our contacts for the Cardinals, when Zeke Turner started, he texted us and was like, he was like, I don't know where this guy plays because he's really struggling on defense. And then it just became obvious how good he was going to be and influential he could be in the special teams game. And so, you know, even like for guys that work for and are there every day, when you're looking at things like offense and defense, it's hard to find spots for everybody, but sometimes there are guys who are just special teams guys. I mean, the Patriots have had Matthew Slater, and he's been to, what, 19 Pro Bowls?
Probably.
But, like, I mean, he's been with the Patriots, and he's literally a Pro Bowler every year as a special teamer. And when you look at it from that stance, like, it makes sense.
Right, and it was one of those cases, like, when they picked up the rookie class, when you're looking at the undrafted rookies, you felt, oh, he's Buddha's buddy from Washington, and you don't hear anything about him in rookie camp or in mini camp or in OTAs. And you even get to training camp, you don't really notice it, but it's then it's during the preseason games, and he's in on every single special teams play, and he is leveling guys. Now, he isn't picking up those tackles nearly at the rate as he was at the beginning of the year, because guess what? Teams have figured out that he's really good at special teams. And he was not a standout player at Washington.
Not at all.
Except on special teams. He was a standout on special teams. And guess what? That translates. That sort of thing translates. And I think there might be a little bit upside that I'm just a little overexcited about, but maybe there's some upside to him playing linebacker in the future, because that's where they have him playing now. It'd be interesting to see what he can do if he can figure out the scheme.
Yeah, and so we'll see what happens with that. He's been a nice find for them in a otherwise kind of bad year.
Who would be overall your best newcomer so far?
You know, this is a tough one. I wanted to give it to Trey Boston, but I think I'm going to go with with Ben Wickery, because he really solidified and stabilized that secondary when they brought him in. Boston was already out there and they were still having problems with, you know, Jamar Taylor there. So I think I'm going to go with Ben Wickery.
And, you know, I think I'd go that direction as well. Ben Wickery, although actually, yeah, he is my newcomer of the year. And for me, he is my biggest surprise. So he wins two awards for me at this point in the year. He's the best newcomer and he's the biggest surprise because, you know, when they signed him, okay, he was just a guy that, you know, he's one of Steve Wilkes' guys because he played for the Panthers before and he didn't even play for the Panthers last year. And he's got a few starts under his belt, but I don't think anyone, when they made that signing, thought, oh, there's going to be our starting cornerback.
No, and we thought at best he would be a nickel dime type of guy, and he's ended up being one of the better corners that, I mean, again, the Patrick Peterson effect. So he's clearly on a 1-year deal and going to go somewhere else.
And, you know, I hope he comes back because he fits the system really well. Now, this is the big one. I don't, maybe we can put like a rank these. What has been the biggest disappointment for you?
I mean, I think it's a toss up, but I'm going to go Bradford, and I don't know why. Cause I never liked it. I was against it from the start, but what a huge disappointment that was to watch him just, I mean, look completely washed. I mean, there's nothing more you can say about it. He just looked like he had nothing left to give. And that's saying something because that guy's given his body to the NFL. I mean, to football, to the NFL. I mean, his knee is basically made of paper mache. You know, his arm looked considerably weaker this season, and he had to play behind just what can only be defined as a completely atrocious offensive line.
And yeah, I mean, I wrote about it. I think we can qualify Sam Bradford as probably the biggest free agent mistake or bust the Cardinals have ever had. And they've had some pretty big ones, but I because of the expectation, because of the money, the fact that he was benched after three games. I mean, you have to think, because our expectations for the Cardinals this season were in part predicated on having a competent Sam Bradford to manage the game and not screw things up. And he looked, I mean, he played like the preseason game when he came in, remember? He looked great. There was a couple series that he was, it's you had a view of what's going to happen. This is the offense they're going to have. They're going to open things up. But it was a combination of maybe he was afraid of getting hurt, so he was playing not to get hurt. He was uncomfortable in the offense. He was uncomfortable behind the offensive line and knew that he had a rookie quarterback breathing down his neck.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a joke, but it wasn't really a joke. It was the, Sam Bradford's your quarterback? That means you're getting your franchise quarterback right now. Because, I mean, that's kind of been the running joke for him. You know, he went from Goff to Wentz to Kirk Cousins to Josh Rosen. I mean, that poor guy, like you get, you know, he's the guy – He's the person you date before you find the one you're going to marry, right? Like that's basically who Sam Bradford is now in his career. So I expect the Giants or the Jaguars to go ahead and pick him up shortly to then guarantee that they get their franchise quarterback next year.
But he's not the only disappointment. I think equally disappointing has been Dalen Buchanan, because I wouldn't put quite Hassan Reddick into that category, but think about when Steve Wilkes was hired and Al Holcomb was hired as defensive coordinator. What were the two things that we were most excited about defensively. We were going to see Daylon Buchanan in a system that features linebackers. Where, you know, he had a Thomas Davis type season in 2015, and now he has the Thomas Davis defense. And the fact that he was bad, he looked in week one bad, just downright bad on the field. He no longer looked fast. He no longer looked certain. He wasn't flying around the field. He wasn't covering, and he wasn't making tackles. It's coming around, but I think for certain, this has been a huge, for me, it's the other biggest disappointment. Well, one of the other two biggest disappointments.
Well, and so if you went Buchanan, I would say the other one for me is the offensive line. And it's just, again, we talked about it, and we've talked about it kind of ad nauseum. Steve Wilks has thrown as much at the wall along the offensive line as conceivable. I mean, just anything you can think of, he's tried it, and he's basically failed at every turn. And I'm not going to put it all on Steve Keim, but at some point it's all on Steve Keim, right? Like that's the hard part, is that he has continued to throw different things at the offensive line, different, you know, whether it's first round picks or now day two picks or late round picks or high price free agents or middle of the road free agents or undrafted free agent. I mean, like, nothing has stuck and nothing has really taken off. And again, you know, we talked about it in the grades. This is considered the worst offensive line in the NFL. And at that, it's disappointing.
And one other disappointment for me, obviously, is, and this probably goes without saying, is the play of David Johnson, or the production of David Johnson, because this was supposed to be the David Johnson offense. I mean, and it's been, well, first, it was like they were trying to avoid David Johnson. And then the offensive line play has been bad. And so we just haven't gotten, we've had moments of, oh, yeah, that's what he can do too. But it's been mostly, why aren't they involving him?
Yeah, and it's just frustrating, and it's, I would say, his production, his usage, his at times, his effort level have all been disappointing in this season.
And I think that should wrap up our awards. When we come back to the next segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour in Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to look ahead to the Chiefs. Yeah, the Chiefs. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Let's look ahead to the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, we know that this is, I mean, let's be honest, this is an unwinnable game by all accounts, correct?
Yeah, I mean, this is the largest margin of a point spread margin of the 2018 NFL season. Think about that. I mean, you've got the 49ers. The 49ers played Green Bay on Monday Night Football. You've got the Oakland Raiders have played the Chargers and the Chiefs. You had the Bills going to Minnesota. And the Cardinals traveling to Kansas City trumps all of that as the largest point differential going into the game of the season at, you know, we'll just call it minus 17 for now.
Yeah, it's the initial line was anywhere between 16.5 and 18.5. There's some incredible numbers. Now we look at this Chiefs team, and it is just so completely dominant offensively. They are averaging 36 points a game. They're rushing the ball for 117 yards per game. They're throwing the ball for 315 yards a game. They have over 2,000. So they're on pace for throwing, for having over 5,600 yards passing. It's absurd. What they're putting up are video game numbers. Video game numbers. It's like you're playing Madden.
Yeah, and like you said, 5,600 yards, over 50 touchdowns. Kareem Hunt's numbers look like what we expected David Johnson numbers to be. It's just, I mean, from a statistical standpoint, this is right now one of the greatest offenses we've seen in the NFL's history. I mean, we're talking about at the level, if not slightly better statistically, maybe not, you know, maybe not when it's all said and done, but statistically than like the undefeated New England Patriots of 2007. This is statistically better than the greatest show on turf, St. Louis Rams.
So let's look at that. So matching up defensively against this team is going to be a beast. So first of all, the running game, which Cardinals have not been good against the run, is there any chance that they can contain Kareem Hunt?
I mean, no. But but the reason is not because the Cardinals' defense is bad. It's that it's a combination of two things. One, the Cardinals' defense isn't great. But two, the Chiefs have a very good offensive line, and they have a fantastic running back in Kareem Hunt. But more than anything else, they are incredible at scheming things open for Hunt in a number of different ways.
That doesn't sound promising. Now, where do the Cardinals match up? Well, I think here's the one thing that you kind of think that it'll be okay. Patrick Peterson can at least take away Tyreek Hill to some extent. Now, obviously, they're probably going to find him matched up against other teams, but at least it for me, you think you can mitigate that. Vannay Bidwicker is pretty solid, so Sammy Watkins. So what you might be able to do, what, you know, the receiver production might not be what kills the Cardinals.
Right, and that's nice to see. The other thing is they've got so many weapons, and the first thing that you see on it is going to be, you know, you talked about Tyreek Hill. He's on pace for something crazy like 1,300 yards and 12 touchdowns. But they've got Sammy Watkins as their number three option, really their number four option after Hill and Hunt. And then their tight end, Travis Kelce, who's the best tight end in the NFL right now. Because he is basically what Gronk was a couple of years ago when Gronk was healthy. He buries people in the run game, and he's an impossible matchup in the passing game. And so the question becomes, who guards him? Is Trey Boston back? Can Trey guard him? If not, is it Bethea? You cannot put Deion Buchanan or Hassan Reddick on them. It'll be, I mean, he'll go for 200 yards and three touchdowns. So the question is, how do they defend him? That's really what the problem becomes, is that the Cardinals, I mean, we just talked about it. They are talented in the secondary, but at some point you can't keep up with what is an extremely talented and diverse Kansas City offense.
Now here's the other side of the ball. This is where maybe you have a little bit of hope. Now, you can't have too much hope. The Cardinals offense has still been a pretty atrocious, but the Cardinals, if they're going to improve offensively, because Byron Leftwich is calling plays and because the offensive line is getting healthier and because Josh Rosen is developing, the Kansas City defense is pretty dang bad. And so maybe the Cardinals can score points. And you know, I guess my goal for this game, obviously I'd like a win. That seems kind of absurd. Can the Cards cover? I think they can. I think they will cover, because I think they're between the bye week and the fact that Kansas City definitely is weak defensively. They can stay within two scores.
Well, and that's kind of, I mean, you and I were talking about it off the air. Like, how do you grade this game? Obviously, a win is a huge thing, but do you grade this on a – I think you have to grade this on a curve, and you say to yourself, like, hey, all right, the Kansas City Chiefs are averaging 36.3 points per game. All right, so let's be semi-realistic and say, okay, they're not going to they're not going to hold them to 15 points or, you know, 17 points. It's just, I mean, it's not going to happen. If it does, you know, at me, at S Cox FB and be like, ha, hater, you know, whatever. But it's just not going to happen. But if you hold them to 27, I mean, if you hold them not two scores underneath their season average, I think that's a win, right? Like, that's a good defensive effort against the best offense in the NFL. And then to your point, so what happens if you give up 27 and you score 14 or 17? Yeah, it's not a great game by any means, but I mean, you're keeping it respectable. You're giving your team a chance and it's showing that your defense is moving in the right direction. Because you're talking about a team that is averaging 36 over 30. So if you hold them under 30.
And you can score 20?
Yeah. So I think that's kind of how you grade this game. Obviously, if the Cardinals come out and prove Jess and I wrong and you guys all want to go ahead and add us and tell us that we're idiots and, you know, we should have faith in the team and coaching staff, feel free. We're going to be extremely happy to be wrong about this.
Yes. You guys know me. I'm optimistic. I like, can the Cardinals win this game? Can they? I mean, Minnesota lost to Buffalo at home, so there's always that. So if Buffalo can beat Minnesota in Minnesota, the Cardinals can beat the Chiefs on the road. Will they? No, but I do expect a competitive game. That's really what I'm hoping for, a competitive game. And with the season, with the rest of the season, how the schedule lines up, they've got some really tough schedule. And we talked about it off the air. Also, essentially, wins and losses matter, but what matters is how they win and lose. They can't have any more embarrassments like in Los Angeles or like against Denver. They can't have any of those anymore. But if they, you know, if they have a lead that they blow or a comeback that doesn't quite go through, those are steps in the positive direction, especially when we're in progress in development mode.
Yeah, that's the other thing is you have to be realistic where you are as a team. And right now they're as a team, they are a bad team. And so you're looking for growth and you're looking for continued development. And what they did on Thursday Night Football was the opposite of that. And then they came back and they went in the right direction the next week. So like just said, obviously the goal is to win every football game, but the reality is, are you getting better each week? Are you creating a product that is not only watchable for the fans, but is proving to the players to buy in because you're headed in the right direction?
You willing to make a prediction? I think I am. I think this is going to be a 29-23 game.
I'm going to say 31-20. They cover and they hold them beneath their season average, which is a positive thing all around. As positive as you're going to get for obviously the unfortunate reality of what we're kind of dealing with this year.
When we come back for the last segment of the Rise of Secret podcast, we'll talk about some of the roster moves, the say goodbye to Sam Bradford, and discuss what are they doing on that offensive line on the roster. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk is back. And we have a few roster moves. Sam Bradford, cut. John Wetzel to IR. Kendall Wright back on the roster. They added Colby Gossett, a guy named Colby Gossett, a week ago to the roster, letting one guy go. They added as well. They signed off another practice squad. Zach Golditch. A gold itch. That's not a real name, but he's apparently a real person. Now, what the Sam Bradford release, that's a tough thing. And I know they needed the roster spots, and I know that Steve Wilkes, I mean, and Sam Bradford wasn't going to play, so I get that. But it does go in bad form when you've got a team captain that you've let go, and he, by all accounts, has not been a problem and in the locker room. Now, lucky for him, he's going to get all his money except for the roster bonus. He's cleared waivers so he can sign wherever he wants, or he might be done. Did it come as a surprise for you? Now, yeah, aside from the timing, where it's a Saturday afternoon of the bye week, I don't know why they did it then.
Because they had to make life difficult for you and I.
Yeah. Jeez. But, I mean, were you surprised by it? I am a little bit, but it also, I mean, they said best for the organization. So it frees up a roster spot for someone else when they've got depth problems. It lets Sam, you know, kind of off the hook. And gives them, an extra sixth round pick of a compensatory pick in the NFL draft this next year, potentially. So if there were reasons to do it, but it's, you know, you wanted Sam around Josh Rosen as much as you could, and now you took that off the team.
I think, and I wonder, and I am guessing, I don't have any insight to this. I didn't reach out to anybody because, quite frankly, I didn't care. But it makes you assume that they had tried to trade him before the deadline. Just to see if, you know, they'd probably asked him quietly, like, hey, would you waive your no trade clause? And then at that point, they couldn't find any buyers, or, you know, he said no. And so at that point, it's like, all right, well, you know, we're going to let you go. This is, you know, like you said, no hard feelings. This isn't a we're trying to save money type thing. This is just a the reality of the season type thing, that we are, one, a bad football team that's going with a younger, you know, a youth movement at the position, and two, quite frankly, we're beat up. We need the roster spot. We're carrying 11 offensive linemen.
11 offensive linemen. Now, do you think Sam Bradford plays again?
I don't. I mean, I joked about the Giants and the Jaguars, but I don't. I think at times I thought he was gonna, you know, snap out of it, but he just looked done to me.
Yeah, it's like he met his football mortality, and when it ended with the fumble and he just laid on the ground, and you could tell thereafter he was embarrassed. I mean, he's a proud football player. He's had success. He's played at a high level. And so to suddenly see the performance just kind of drop off a ledge, I wonder if he has come to grips with this football mortality. Everyone knows that he's been paid plenty of money. He's made $127 million in his career. As some people on Twitter like said, the finesse Hall of Fame he deserves to be in.
Definitely. And it's been, you know, one of those situations where he's just done a great job year after year finding roster spots and finding GMs that'll pay him absurd amount of money.
And it just didn't work out. Now, going on to the parts where you got the roster moves. So now, yes, they have 11 offensive linemen. They lost John Wetzel, which is a blow to that depth. Their experienced depth now looks like this. So they've got their starters, which is already, you know, Mason Cole, a rookie. He's starting because A.Q. Shipley got hurt. So now their experienced depth includes Ode Abushi, who's got, I think, 26 starts in the last 5 years, can play, you know, guard and tackle. You've got Jeremy Vunovich, whom they added at the start of the season, who was a 16-game starter for the Colts. You've got Daniel Munier, whose only career start came this year because both guards were hurt. And then you have rookies. In fact, right, of those 11 players on the offensive line, four of them are rookies. You've got the third round pick, Mason Cole. You've got seventh round pick, Corey Cunningham. Colby Gossett, whom they signed off the Minnesota Vikings practice squad, was a sixth rounder pick this year. And they just added Zach Goldich, who was with the Colts, who was an undrafted free agent. What do you think they're trying to do with the offensive line? It's kind of an interesting movement they're making.
I think it's just the fact that kind of what we talked about, the offensive line is disappointed. They've thrown as much and now more as they can to fix it. And it's just going to continue to be a kind of a revolving door, if you will, until they figure out a way to fix it. And so until that happens, how do you do anything but continue to throw bodies at it and see if Ray Brown and company can find a match that fits what they need.
And so we look at the offensive line, and now the depth chart, the way it looks right now, and it's kind of interesting. And obviously the depth chart doesn't necessarily mean anything until how they go in rotationally. They've got Corey Cunningham, now the back left tackle, DJ Humphreys. Vunovich is the backup to Mikey Pye, left guard. Daniel Munier at center, Ode Abushi at guard. Zach Goldish is your backup right tackle, and Colby Gossett is your third string guard. In reality, I would guess that how things will actually go, Jeremy Vunovich is reserve number one for the interior, with Abushi being reserve number one at tackle. And then after that, it's kind of crapshoot, I would guess.
Yeah, and it's going to be completely... It's going to be completely interesting to see how this goes from here on out because, you know, we've seen Upati, Pugh, and Smith have an injury history. Can they stay healthy? I don't think anything happens with Cole. I'd be really shocked if anything happened with Cole at this point. I think they're just going to kind of let him learn and take his lumps with Rosen. And then Humphreys is... You know, the Humphreys is the one they've needed to stay healthy, and, you know, let's not jinx it.
And
here's the other thing. Who'd they just lose? John Wetzel, who's the guy that you kind of always was the Band-Aid to all the injuries they've dealt with, and now he's gone.
Yep, and so now you're left with not much depth, a lot of youth, and maybe they turn into something, but... If they now granted, you know, two of these guys, in fact, three of them, you know, Corey Cunningham, he's been inactive every game, and these two other guys were on practice squads on other teams, so they weren't good enough for their actual squad. And so it's just, hey, we'll see what we can do. Can Ray Brown coach these guys up? And hopefully Ray Brown doesn't turn into Russ Grimm, because he has not improved this offensive line thus far.
Yeah, and that's you and I talked about that off the air, and I was like, is this another Russ Grimm situation where you've got a guy that's a proven commodity and he comes here and forgets what he's doing? Or I don't know. I mean, it's frustrating because that was like the Al Holcomb, Steve Wilks defense, that was one of the big things I liked about this staff was I felt like they got teachers, and they needed desperately teachers, and all of a sudden the guys that I expected to make improvements are all worse or just as bad. And so that's hard to deal with.
And with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We've given awards, we've given grades, we've talked about the Chiefs. Maybe we'll be back in we will be back in a week, but maybe, just maybe, a Cardinals win? Not likely, but hopefully at least a competitive Cardinals team. We'll talk about that next week as we record next Tuesday night, publish that on Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon, whenever I can get that posted. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, and this is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast.
Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red. Run!